This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With a new podcast every day of the Premier League season, this is Football Social Daily.
West Ham United are top of the Premier League. Leicester City, they got hammered. 4-1 the score in Monday night football at the London Stadium as the spotlight shone on Mikel Antonio, who had his dancing shoes on too. We'll pick out the best and the worst of last night on today's show. Also, we take a look at the troubles at Arsenal. Turbulent times at the Emirates, with choppy waters forecast for the week ahead if the newspapers are anything to go by. Plus, the latest top flight transfer talk is on the agenda as Norwich City secure a Manchester United man on loan. A potential Declan Rice move is on the back pages yet again. And could Crystal Palace yet add to their squad before the window shuts in just 7 days' time? This is Football Social Daily, the Premier League podcast from Sports Social, with a new episode every day of the season. A brand new podcast 7 days a week, and you won't miss a trick when it comes to the top flight if you hit subscribe now. With me today on the show, there's no point me introducing him, as you just know he's here, Marley Anderson. Hello again, mate.
Back again. Bad smell lingers.
And we've also got Steve McNaughton with us. Morning, Steve.
Morning, gents. How are we doing?
Yeah, we're good. I was just wondering, or we were wondering, if you ever did manage to get in touch with Shaqiri's hair clinic in the end last night?
No, couldn't get in. The lines were busy. I was in a queue for a couple of hours, but, you know, no joy.
After Football Social Daily went out yesterday, they were inundated, I heard. Let's begin today's show at the big Premier League story, and that comes from last night's action at the London Stadium, where West Ham United dispatched of Leicester City 4-1 to go top of the Premier League table. The Hammers hitting those dizzying heights with an accomplished performance against what I thought was an abject Leicester side, who did have Iotse Perez sent off for a nasty challenge. We'll get into the nuts and bolts of the game shortly. But first, Marley, we predicted on yesterday's show that this game would be closer than it actually was. I think we found it difficult to pick a winner. I think you went for Leicester. Joel on yesterday's podcast went for West Ham. But it was West Ham convincingly by 4-1 in the end. A bit of a statement win from the Hammers, you have to say.
Yeah, really impressive from West Ham. I know, you know, the red card probably warps the balance of the game, but, you know, you've still got a good, organised, solid, good 10 men in front of you. So, you know, they're going to be trying to scrap out and trying to win a point when they're 1-0 down, they go down to 10 men. So I feel like there was still work there to be done for West Ham, but, you know, we mentioned yesterday about the crowd being there and things like that. The crowd were fantastic, I thought. And they really spurred West Ham on. And, you know, they scored good goals. Like, they were decent goals as well. Like, they proper picked Leicester apart at times. Capitalised on the mistakes for the Soyuncu one as well. And fair play to them. They've set out their marker. They've got 8 goals in the first 2 games. That was probably where you're looking at West Ham and saying, can they hit them heights to finish comfortably in the top half again and maybe challenge for Europe? Can they score the goals? And they've answered that so far this season. 8 goals in 2 games, top of the league and sitting pretty.
Yeah, we said yesterday, Steve, can West Ham build on that foundation that they set last season, finishing just outside of the Champions League places? And they were in the running for the top four for a large chunk of last season. And there were a few question marks over whether they could kick on and do it again. But they've shown early doors that that's certainly going to be a possibility for them.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, David Moyes is building, you know, has been building somewhat good there. I mean, there's a very good unity in the squad. What I like at the minute about West Ham is that we're not talking about them two divvies they've got as owners. You know, we're talking about what's going on the pitch and what's not happening off it. And, you know, it's a big stadium that they've got, you know, almost 60,000 people in last night. And they're playing great football. I mean, you know, they're a real difficult team to play against, West Ham, on the day. Very, very physical. You're not going to get an easy ride off them at all. And I think, you know, them starting to stick it to teams like Leicester is a good indication on what's to come. I don't think they'll get top four this season. I think over 38 games, it'll be quite difficult for them. But I'd certainly be backing them to getting them Europa League places.
Part of the reason that West Ham did play well last night was obviously because Leicester were reduced to 10 men during the game. Iotse Perez was red carded after the assessment by VAR. Michael Oliver was the referee, went over to the monitor. Was that the right decision for you, Marley? It looked very nasty in slow motion. These tackles often do, but I don't think there can be too many complaints, in my opinion. I just wondered what yours was.
Yeah, no real complaints there. There's no intent, but once you catch, you know, a guy on the halfway up his shin with your full base of your foot, you're asking a lot not to get sent off. It's obvious how it happens, and it's obvious why he does it. He's trying to plant his foot the other side of the ball, and therefore use his body to bounce Fornals away. But you know, when you misjudge it, which players do quite a lot, you stamp on someone's foot, or if you get it quite badly wrong, you stamp halfway up the shin, and that's exactly what happened with Fornals. You are never ever gonna stay on the pitch once VAR looks at that. There's no referee in the land that wouldn't give a red card, so no real complaints there. And Perez, all I was thinking is Newcastle did very well to get $30 million for Perez all them years ago, because I don't think he's done much at Leicester, to be honest. And obviously, you know, the red card doesn't change him from a good player into a bad player, but I think he's one of them fringe players at Leicester, and last night was another sort of kick in the teeth for him.
It's interesting you say that, because actually the narrative I've seen from some Leicester supporters is very similar, that they're quite happy to see Leicester strengthen in that position, because Perez, they don't quite feel is up to scratch. I think he's a good option to have, but as you say, you know, is there better out there that Leicester could attract? I think there's probably an argument for yes.
Well, you talk, don't we? We talk recently quite a lot about, you know, 30 million gets you an average player or a good player, or, you know, it doesn't get you a world-class player anymore. And he's probably a shining example of that. You know, he's not more than a fringe player at a top six squad. He's one of the best players at a mid-table, you know, 10th to 15th style club. But he's not got that level of performance to step up, really. But then again, Newcastle got him for $1.25 million from Tenerife. So, you know, we were always taking a nice little chance on him, and it paid off quite well.
Yeah, definitely. Nice little chunk of profit there for the Sports Direct.
Yeah, he's trying to buy House of Fraser with that money.
In terms of the red card, obviously, I don't think there was any intent or malice there from Iotse Perez. I think it was just unfortunate. But does that just go to show, Steve, the speed that the Premier League is played at these days, that even the smallest error you make is punished as severely as a red card?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, with the technology that's in place and the options available to referees these days, I think there's not a single place to hide, and the pace is ferocious. And that was, he kind of come off the back of a challenge, hadn't he? And he was kind of, you know, going straight into another one. So there's a lot of kind of hustle and bustle attached to it. And, you know, yes, definitely straight red card. Unfortunate, though, you know, like you say. And it's just one of them things. I think that when you slow it down with VAR and you look at it in detail from every single angle, and so it looks a million times worse, doesn't it, you know, than it actually is. And it was a bad one anyway. But yeah, I think he's got a 3-game ban coming his way there for that. And, you know, it's one of them things, really. But it's something that happens most weekends, isn't it, in the Premier League? And I think that there's not a lot you could do about it. You know, Marley kind of summarised it quite well, what happened in terms of his body shape and the dynamics involved in that situation. And I think it's just unfortunate all round, really. I mean, you know, hopefully Thornells will be all right after that. I mean, obviously the adrenaline of the game, he'd have gone, you know, he'd have carried on. But I think that, you know, over kind of today, maybe the day after, it might start getting a bit sore, that.
Yeah, I mean, well, people will look at the red card that perhaps didn't watch the game, Steve, and say that, you know, that's probably a reason why Leicester got beat. But it was a bad day at the office all round for them, wasn't it? I mean, Soyuncu making mistakes. Is there any legislation for that, or is it just one of those days for Leicester?
I think it's one of them. I think sometimes, you know, the Soyuncu is a good player. You know, he's a good centre-half. And that, but the genuinely great centre-halves will make one mistake, and you know, which they all do. You know, it doesn't matter who, if I'm talking about Virgil, if I'm talking about Harry Maguire, or if I'm talking about, you know, Koundé or whoever. You know, once they make a mistake, they kind of like switch their head back on, don't they, and get back into it. I think Soyuncu, there was three last night, wasn't there? You know, the first one was the sloppy pass in the middle of the park that led to West Ham's first goal from Thornells, which was a great counter attack. I thought that the second one were he's for better use of a word, had a brain fart, hasn't he? You know, and just, you know, squirted it to a West Ham player to tee up Benrahma. You know, not to take anything away from Antonio, because obviously we'll come on to him like and that, but I thought he could have done better on that first goal of Antonio's last night. I just think that Antonio's just bullied him, you know, and he's not managed to get a foot in or get close enough to him. So I just think I think probably that may go down as one of the worst games of his career. And it's going to be interesting to see how he bounces back from that mentally. And I think Brendan Rodgers will probably have a job to do in the next few days on that side of it. But he's still a good player. You know, he's probably missing his partner, Fofana, who's obviously out with a long-term injury. You know, I think they had Amati next to him, didn't they? And, you know, and Amati's just, he's just not at that level required, unfortunately. So when it goes bad, doesn't it? And as they say, what can go wrong will go wrong. And I think last night was one of them nights for Leicester where they just need to put the lid on the box and move on.
Well, eerily similar on the injury front to what your team Liverpool had to go through last season, with Fofana breaking his leg in pre-season. Yannick Vestergaard, they've just signed him, and he hurt his knee, we don't know how badly, but in a training game over the weekend, and so couldn't play last night against West Ham. And obviously Johnny Evans is still nursing an injury, so actually in terms of first choice centre backs, they've only got Soyuncu. And if Soyuncu has a bad day, well, that just underlines the point of how difficult it can be if you don't have your first choice back line available to you.
I mean, we lost obviously three of our senior centre-backs last season, and the issue is, and what the issue that Leicester are going to have now, I'd be surprised if they went in and bought someone else, because obviously they signed Vestergaard and that, you know, and they can't just keep throwing money at a situation. It's the knock-on effect to the other areas of the pitch as well when this happens, because, you know, if you, I mean, I'll have to use Liverpool as an example because it's the most recent one. You know, we ended up putting Henderson and Fabinho in centre-half last season. You know, I think we played against United with them two at centre-half. And your midfield's out as well, you know. So the knock-on effect is huge. And I think that Leicester, it is not a great start for them in that respect. And I think that plenty of questions for Brendan Rodgers to answer there, but I think he'll be looking at it and he might need to kind of look for a different partner for Soyuncu than Amati, in all honesty.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that. And I think also people tend to gloss over how many attacks start from centre-backs. I mean, Virgil van Dijk for Liverpool is a great example, because the amount of times he pings the ball into midfield, and that's where the attacks begin. You could argue similar for the likes of Wesley Fofana. So I think that sometimes is often overlooked. Let's talk about West Ham, though, and we have to talk, Marley, about Mikel Antonio. Two goals and an assist for him last night. West Ham win 4-1, becomes a West Ham record holder, overtaking Paulo Di Canio for the most Premier League strikes for the Hammers. He said he wanted to own being the Hammers' number 9 by changing his shirt number from 30 to number 9. He said he really wanted to feel like he was the focal point, the key man, the main man at West Ham, and he showed exactly why he should feel like that last night, because it was another great performance from him.
Yeah, he was brilliant, especially that second half, you know. His goal, you know, you mentioned before about, was it Sancho? He just pinned him, and it was perfect striker play. Like, we've seen Lukaku do it at the weekend, and Arsenal couldn't get near him. But, you know, you could argue that Arsenal have quite lightweight centre-backs, and Leicester certainly don't with Sancho. He's a beast. He's a big lad. Hard to muscle off the ball, and Antonio made him look like a child with when he backed into him and just spun him and smashed it in the bottom corner. It's like, that's a striker that's been around for a few years and knows exactly, you know, how to use his body. And from his journey's been insane, because no one could have ever predicted him being, you know, top scorer at a Premier League club. He used to be, you know, a squad sort of right back, right wing back, winger, sub player, impact player sort of thing. He was down in the Championship for much of his sort of early 20s, mid 20s, and then just finds his home at West Ham.
I just remember him as being that fast winger who played for Sheffield Wednesday. And then all of a sudden now he's scoring 50 goals almost in the Premier League for West Ham. It's crazy.
It's madness. He had very little end product. He couldn't really cross as a winger. He could beat the man and bully a fullback all day long, but he couldn't, you know, really cross it or provide any real quality. But, you know, I think, I don't know who's quite should be credited with his transformation into a striker. If it is Moyes, then fair play to Moyes, because he's used that sort of core of what he's got. He's got pace, he's got power, he can head it, he's brave, and he makes the perfect striker sort of thing now. And if he can add the finishing and the sort of nous inside the 18-yard box, then, you know, he could be a very, very useful player, and he's proven that by 50 Premier League goals now for West Ham, or 51.
I think it's 49, I think. He got to 49 last night. But he's on the verge of 50.
Oh,
so his next Premier League goal will be his 50th, I think, in 160 games. So I think he's got a goal and assist in almost one every two games, which is excellent for a player who is often overlooked.
Yeah, and for a long time he wasn't in the West Ham first team, really, when they were spending money on other strikers like Javier Hernandez, and that didn't work. And then Haller was in front of him for a little bit. And you could go back even before that. So, you know, he's done really well for himself. I'm really pleased for him, and he's such an intriguing guy. You'd love to go for a pint with him, because he's actually got a personality which many Premier League footballers just don't. They're all very square, aren't they, a lot of them? But he's someone you'd actually tune in and listen to an interview with or want to hear from.
I'm so glad you've said that, because I thought that when I was listening to him speak last night. He's just a breath of fresh air. And I think Gary Neville pointed it out. It just makes you smile, which is what you want when you're watching football. You want your footballers to have character and personality. We always think back to these cult heroes, the likes of Gazza, who was absolutely crazy at times. But that's just what makes you laugh and smile now, thinking about it. And I think actually we're seeing that come back ever so slightly with the likes of Mikel Antonio. I think Connor Cody's a great listen. I think James Maddison is another with personality. And often with footballers now, they're so media trained and sanitized within an inch of their lives, Steve. You lose that personality, which what makes you feel connected to them as a football fan in the first place. So not only did we see his actions on the pitch, we also saw his celebration with a cardboard cutout of himself. Those are the sort of things that bring a smile to your face, which is what you want after the dark times we've been through.
Absolutely, yeah. I thought it was fantastic that, and I was, you know, it's kind of buzzing for him, you know, when I seen all that happening. Great energy, you know, good vibes. And, you know, he's just kind of spearheading, you know, West Ham's form at the minute, isn't he? And you know, he's carried them, you know, I mean, they finished last season really well, and they've just picked up where they left off after a good pre-season. And he's great. I mean, it's a shame, you know, he's 31 years of age. I mean, I'd like to see what he could do in an England shirt, you know, on the international front. But I think he's picked someone else now. Has he picked Jamaica now, has he?
I'm not sure. I don't think he's got any. I think he got called
sure,
up. Did he get called up to an England squad once? But I don't think he ever got.
He's played for England, but I think it was in a friendly.
No, okay. That might be one for the listeners to let us know. But, you know, I just think that, I'm a big, big fan of him. And, He's a monster as well. You know, the size he's got on him. You know, I was having a look. He's 82 kilos. He's like a bloody UFC middleweight. You know, and that's why he's able to flick people off him and bulldoze. He's just like on that first one. I mean, I know I picked on Cheonsu before, but that first goal, he's just held him off, hasn't he? You know what I mean? And just being able to get that turn on, you know, to get a great shot away. And they've got a gem there, and his confidence is sky high at the minute. He's playing with a real smile on his face. He's had his first share of injuries throughout his career, as we know. And I think if he can go through the season, there's no reason why he can't be shooting for 15 to 20 goals this season if he stays injury free. But you know, he does well. You know, West Ham are giving him great service. You know, he's getting out wide as well, and he had obviously an assist as well last night, you know, which was very nice for him. Started the season great, 3 goals, 2 assists, absolutely brilliant. And long may it continue, and apart from 2 games a season against us, because we need to keep him quiet.
Well, it's a shame that Jim Salverson's on holiday this week, because I would have loved to have heard him gloat that West Ham are top of the Premier League. I think, not sure we'll be seeing that for too much longer, but still, great stuff from Mikhail Antonio. As you say, Steve, they're giving him the chances, and if they keep giving him the chances, he's shown that he can finish them off, and that'll be of a great benefit to West Ham as the season progresses. The Hammers beating Leicester last night, Monday Night Football, 4-1, great result for them to the top of the table after just 2 games. Leicester with some work to do, of course, and so do Arsenal have plenty of work to do. They've got some problems to iron out, and it's the Gunners we'll be talking about next on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back. This is Football Social Daily from Sport Social. Make sure you hit subscribe, and that way you won't miss an episode of the podcast. 7 new shows a week, including at the weekends, where we preview and review all of the Premier League games. So make sure you hit subscribe, as I say, and that way you won't miss one. For now, though, we're going to talk about Arsenal, because there's been a few stories in the papers today after their poor start to the season. My question is it really that bad for Arsenal right now? Or is it just because they're such a big club, people are getting carried away? Because after all, Marley, we are only 2 games into the season. They just lost to a title contender in Chelsea. And let's face it, Arsenal aren't a title contender. So is there any real shame in losing to a side of the quality of Chelsea? And losing to Brentford was poor. Obviously, it was a blow, but it was the first game of the season. Opening day always throws up some odd results. So even though it's 2 games and 2 losses, is it really as bad for Arsenal as people say?
It's not. It's not not bad. It's not nothing to worry about. I do think it's been maybe slightly blown out of proportion, but you know, Arteta's been there like 2 years now, and they're not seeing what, like the sort of level of progress that you'd expect. They've got the funds to sort things out. They're not doing enough, I don't think, in the market to appease fans. I think they've spent the most money this summer, and still you look at the squad and think, I'm not that scared of anyone in that squad. They've still got problems. Aubameyang, his future is yet again up in the air. He's whether he even wants to play for Arsenal anymore. Granit Xhaka nearly left and then ended up coming back from the dead and captaining Arsenal in their first 2 games, which is just the most Arsenal thing ever. Of you know, practically booking the guy's ticket to Rome, and then, you know, all of a sudden he's captain again and playing, and they're relying on him. Thomas Partey has never done much other than be injured since he came in from Atletico for huge money. They had to beg and scrap to get Odegaard back, and obviously that looks like good business, but he's then got a hell of a lot of weight on his shoulders. So I don't think it's nothing to worry about by any means, but I mean, you know, if you look on our Twitter feed, I've sort of took the mick out of Arsenal yesterday by, was it Balogun, the one of the players, saying like, tough times, you know, here, but we'll keep going or something. And it was in a photo in black and white, and I was like, it's 2 games in, mate. You know, you're acting like you're on the verge of relegation, and you're going to come back stronger next season. And if the players are doing that, I know it's probably, you know, going to this thing, it might be a social media manager and whatever, but it's still coming from the players' account. That that negativity is spreading through that club, and that is like Japanese knotweed. You are going to struggle to get rid of that. That's like getting me off a podcast.
You've got
off this podcast.
The first Japanese knotweed of the season. Yes. Chalk it up for one.
It's like, honestly, it's like me on this podcast. I just will not go. And it's just, it's spreading. It's spreading. So you're looking at that and you're thinking, you know, maybe that is a real problem now, because, you know, there's work to do at Arsenal, and who's going to do it? There's questions over Arteta. There's links with Conte this week, and Conte turned down Spurs for not being ambitious enough. So why the hell would he go to Arsenal? He wanted more money at Spurs to say, well, you know, if I'm going to do all this work, I need to be very, very handsomely paid. And you know he won't mince his words. He'll clatter some heads in the interview if he has to. Antonio Conte is mental, but why would he go to Arsenal? It's the exact same problem, if not worse, than Spurs.
Yeah, and we'll come on to Antonio Conte in a second, but I think Marley's right. There's that old saying, isn't there? Misery loves company, and I think that it certainly does spread that negativity once it comes from within the club, which is what Marley's suggesting with these players' social media accounts. I think it's easy for that to kind of filter down and, you know, impact on the fans, which is sort of the one faction of the club you don't want to get offside is the supporters. And Mikel Arteta, after that defeat to Chelsea, has now lost as many games at the Emirates as Wenger did in a 6-year period. The Mirror say that he's going to be backed. Do you think he should be backed, Steve, or has he been backed? And if so, how long has he got? Because we'll come on to the Antonio Conte links in a second, because they are there in other newspapers. But the Mirror suggesting that Mikel Arteta will be backed. But if that's the case, surely the clock is against him.
I think so. I was, you know, almost championing patience last season on the podcast, wasn't I, with him, and saying, "Bear with him, there's a good young manager there that is finding his way, and you know, he's trying to work things out at Arsenal." Unfortunately, he spent quite a lot of money at Arsenal. I mean, he's got to have spent over $200 million by now. I mean, with the players that he's signed, Partey. It is a funny one because he murdered us in the Champions League over two games. He just bossed the two games that when we played Atletico Madrid. He's gone to Arsenal, which was a funny move for him. And he just can't stay fit. You know, very similar to Khan and Abby Keita for Liverpool, is that they just keep pulling up. You know, both of them keep pulling up, and we're not sure, you know, why. And I think that, you know, I've said for a long time, culturally, it's not right at Arsenal. And until they address that mentality with some substantial sports, psychotherapy, to get the mindset right across the whole club. Because one of the first things that Arteta said when he joined, he said he wants everyone singing on the same hymn sheet. And he's not achieved that. And, you know, there's too much division at Arsenal, and there's too many different parties involved that have an opinion. And it
sounds like, for now, Steve, they're all singing off Now 52. They're all singing a different frigging song.
Absolutely. And I think that you know, the recruitment has been questionable, shall we say. Odegaard for £34 million, you know, was a no-brainer, but I think 34 is still a bit steep. You know, and then the Ramsdale one is bonkers. Is absolutely bonkers, because you don't pay up to £30 million for a reserve goalkeeper. And they've actually got a good, decent goalkeeper in Bernd Leno. So I don't get that one. Obviously, Ben White's got coronavirus at the minute. You know, he would have played against Chelsea at the weekend. He's out of the Man City game at the weekend. They're probably going to get absolutely mulled at Man City at the weekend. They're just fortunate that Man City don't have anyone to bully the centre-halves. And, you know, it's all about kind of pace and intricacy and, you know, finding angles and stuff like that. But I think the problems are really deep-rooted. I mean, I've seen that Willian's off to Corinthians on a free transfer. A horrendous piece of business, you know, to bring him in from Chelsea. I mean, him giving the soundbite about wanting to win the Champions League in 3 years and all that. It's just, there's delusion, there's cultural problems, and the money that has been made available, which is substantial, is not being invested wisely. I mean, they signed a kid from Anderlecht, didn't he? And he signed, I think he did play at the weekend against Chelsea in midfield. And he signed a young lad from Portugal as well, didn't he? Is it Mendes, not Tavares.
Tavares,
yeah.
He's a good player as well, but like, you know, Tierney's probably their best player at left back, and they signed another left back, and it all just makes no sense.
It doesn't make any sense, and you know, whereas really, you know, for your goalkeeper for a start, you'd be wanting to spend, you know, below five million for a reserve goalkeeper. Really, you could probably get an half decent reserve goalkeeper for that money. But spending that level of cash on Ramsdale is just crazy, and I don't know who's sanctioned that off and got a bit giddy about it and done it.
But you say, I mean, 129 million quid spent this summer is the most of any Premier League club, and what have they got to show for it really in terms of quality? Odegaard, we know,
I think it's the most in Europe now.
But is it the most in Europe really as well? Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's staggering then. I mean, that even further highlights the significance of this window for Arsenal. And we've even said before about Mikel Arteta, I think like you were saying last season on the podcast, there is a good young manager there, but he hasn't evolved from that. You know, we said we saw the green shoots at Arsenal a couple of times over the last 12 months or so when the likes of Saka and Smith Rowe has turned in good performances, but they haven't developed from that green shoot into anything more substantial or significant. It just feels stuck. And they can't get through that point that they need to get through to become a successful side again. And you have to say that's surely the manager, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a real pressure cooker situation because every game is like super important and there's so much ride on in every single game. It's like every single game with the media and the vibe, certainly from the fans, is like a cup final for them. And I just think that, you know, they haven't got that what Pep Guardiola's got or Ollie's got at United at the minute, or you know, Jurgen's got, or Thomas Tuchel's got, where he can just go, right, we've got this game on Tuesday night in the Champions League or in the Premier League, and let's just set up for it. It's a massive panic around every game, and I think that the lineup that got put out on Sunday, when I seen it, I thought, oh, they're going to get smashed. And you know, as soon as the team, you know, was published, I thought that there's no chance. And the Lukaku situation, even though he is a monster, the way he bulldozed that team was embarrassing. And, you know, it was really embarrassing. And Arsenal, and it's not an Arteta thing, it's a Unai Emery thing. It's a Wenger in his last couple of seasons thing. And despite the record of the previous 18 years or whatever it was, is they are soft-centred. And they cannot address that. And that's why I say it's time for, you know, for sports therapists to come in and do the mental work with them, like they've done at Man City, like they've done at Liverpool, where, you know, they turn them into mentality monsters. And when they step on the pitch, it's like, we're not getting beat. And, you know, by hook or by crook, we're doing this. Because if you look at that Man City team over the last 4 or 5 years or whatever.
Just relentless, aren't they? Once
just
they get
relentless.
On
the roll. And same with Liverpool as well, obviously. But, you know, obviously last season was bad. They had a horrendous 14-game period with injuries and whatnot. But, you know, they step onto that pitch knowing that they will get a result, you know, against that team. And they're playing till the last minute because against them two teams in particular, and United to a certain extent on occasion, they scored in the 93rd, 94th minute, 95th minute to make sure that they're getting the 3 points. And Arsenal just don't have that. They crumble so easily, and it must be absolutely infuriating for the fans. And you know, and I'm not having a dig or anything like that. I'm being genuine when I kind of say I can't see a way out of it for them. I think it'll be it might be a 10th place finish this season, something like that. I think they're well out of it.
Exactly what happened to AC Milan over in Italy, where, you know, I know they were more successful than Arsenal in terms of winning Champions Leagues and stuff like that and getting to finals and competing in Serie A. But I mean, if you take the European side out of it, certainly in terms of being a big prestigious club in a country, AC Milan are definitely that. And then probably for the last decade until now, they've been mid-table or at least in the Europa League spots. Sometimes they've not even finished in the Europa League places. And it feels very, very similar to that. And, you know, there will be a time where Arsenal do rise again. But like you say, Steve, it's exceptionally hard to see when that time will come. It certainly doesn't appear to be in the near future. And actually, although he doesn't make that many good points, Paul Merson made a really good one on Sky Sports actually the other day, talking about his former club, where he said, out of the top six, or the big six as we like to call them, probably only three Arsenal players would get in any of the other teams' squads, and that would be Tierney, Saka, and, you know, another of probably
Smith Rowe,
you know, a Smith Rowe or a Aubameyang or someone like that in terms of a squad. But actually, if you had to hand pick a top six team to play a cup final against, you'd be picking Arsenal every time.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You wouldn't fancy Chelsea, City, Liverpool, Manchester United, or probably even Tottenham. Given the choice, you'd be picking Arsenal. Yeah. And I think that just goes to show where they fall in the pecking order in terms of, you know, quality and standards in the Premier League right now, which is of great disappointment to Arsenal fans.
Yeah.
Now, you touched upon Antonio Conte a moment ago, Marley, and The Telegraph today are reporting that he is the preferred candidate should Arteta be sacked by Arsenal. You've already said why you don't think Antonio Conte would go to Arsenal, but is that the sort of calibre of manager that they need to try and aim for if they are going to get back to where they want to be?
It's one thing targeting that calibre, and it's another thing getting them. I mean, if I split up with my fiancé tomorrow and targeted Margot Robbie, I'd get told to go away quite harshly.
You just wouldn't get a response, probably.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, so Conte, I'd be amazed if Conte picked
my phone. Speak to my agent.
Yeah, you know, it's one thing going for someone, it's another thing getting someone. I don't think they're anywhere near that level of pull anymore, not at all. I'd say there's three teams in the Premier League that could get Conte if they wanted him, and none of them are Arsenal. You're probably looking at Man United, Man City and Liverpool as the three that could potentially go and get him if he was out there. But no, not at all. I'm struggling to even think what I think they could get a good manager, and an experienced manager, but not like Conte is literally one of the top five in the world, comfortably as well, really, in my opinion. But you know, he's nowhere near Arsenal's level right now.
Do you think someone like Rafa Benitez, who's now at Everton, would have gone and managed Arsenal?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Totally. I think he would have, Everton you know, have got the manager that Arsenal need, because he would have made them solid. I mean, I seen a comment at the weekend, I can't remember what player said it, and it was like, how's life under Rafa Benitez at Everton, you know, in terms of training and stuff like that? And he said, running. Apparently, he is really pushing them hard and getting them into ideal physical condition, alongside the mental side with him. And I just think someone like a Rafa, who's been got the t-shirt, seen it all, a host of clubs, would have been the guy to instill that steel-like mentality in what is essentially a very fragile bunch of players.
I do wonder if you did a poll between Arsenal fans as to would you rather right now have Mikel Arteta stay at the helm or Rafa Benitez. I do wonder what the results would look like, because I think that's a really interesting one.
I feel like they'd be like, well, we still want Arteta because Rafa used to be at Chelsea. And it's like, well, they hated him at Chelsea. They never gave him a chance and he still won them a trophy. So what could he do with you, like, if you actually, you know, showed him the respect? I think the fans sometimes are a real issue at Arsenal. I think they really, you know, every team's got sort of fans that lurch from this is a disaster to we're brilliant and the good times are coming. But Arsenal seem to be a fan base that really do lurch from one extreme to the other at times. And I feel like sometimes they sort of use their past as something that can cloud the future. If Rafa was out there, the fans wouldn't want him. And that is baffling because he's the most professional manager there is. You know, how he conducted himself in Newcastle when his hands were being tied and he was only given enough rope with which to hang himself with in terms of to run a football club and be successful. And all that time he remained totally professional. Then he goes into Everton and everybody hates him and he's getting death threats and, you know, stupid little bed sheets with, you know, F off Rafa, we know where you live and all that stuff. And he's still the most professional manager out there. So imagine what he could do with a squad like Arsenal who have talent and just have an attitude problem. I feel like he could be somebody who could sort them out. But, you know, that ship has sailed. So you've screwed it. You're going to have to go in another direction and suffer for a bit longer until things get better.
I think it's a good point about Rafa's that he and Marley will be able to kind of back this up, is that what he does as well is he absolutely immerses himself in the area and the culture and the vibes, and he really gets stuck into that. Whereas I feel like Arsenal under Unai Emery and obviously Arteta is they're not quite doing that. You know what I mean? It doesn't feel like that, you know, they're kind of... what's the word I can say? You know, like they're all in, if you like, and you know what I mean, to it. And it's they're taking the salary and they're kind of trying to set them up to be successful and stuff like that. But I think someone like a Rafa, and you never know, he might come available in 12 months and that. But I think, you know, if Newcastle had needed a manager in 12 months, I'd fancy him to go back there out of the two. I just think that, yeah, they need someone who goes in, ingrains himself in the culture, and who lives and breathes Arsenal for the next few years, and they haven't got that.
No, I mean, carrying on with the Telegraph, we could mention this story that's also in that same paper today. Arsenal were open to Aubameyang leaving the club. I mean, in terms of how the Arsenal fans would feel, just quickly on this one, Marley, I know he hasn't been the same player since he signed that new contract a couple of summers ago, but for their sort of main striker, for want of a better term, to leave the club with less than a week to go before the end of the transfer window, not looking likely that anyone's going to come in. Two out of two games, both lost. I mean, is that just another blow to the Gunners if that was to come to fruition?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think that anyone should be too bothered about him leaving, but with a week or so to go, you know, it's not the time to be losing players that take some replacing. Who's out there that you could go and sign in the space of a week to replace a guy who scored all them goals for you over the years? I know he's dropped off massively, but are you going to go into a season with Lacazette, who's got a bit of a patchy injury record and he's getting on a bit and not as good as he was 3 years ago? And then, you know, Martinelli, who looks promising, and then someone like Balogun and Nketiah, who might be leaving as well. So, you know, I feel like that's another tricky decision, because, yes, you sort of want the money, but do you want the pressure of getting a transfer right in the next 8 days or whatever it is? So I wouldn't be so sure on that. I'd maybe try and keep him, but just try and sort his head out, put a rocket up him and say, you know, say, look, you know, you're the captain of this football club, for God's sake, and you've wanted to leave. You know, there's barely been a six-month period where we've not talked about Aubameyang possibly leaving, either because he was playing well and eyeing another move, or because things were going badly and he was eyeing another move, or his contract was running down and he was looking at, you know, fluttering his eyelashes at PSG or Real Madrid or someone like that. And in reality, they turned around and said, well, we're not interested. We don't want you. Because if they wanted Aubameyang at any point, he'd have gone.
Yeah, it's a great point. And Arsenal are all over the back pages of today's papers in the UK. The Sun suggesting that Arsenal want Kieran Trippier. Manchester United also linked with a move for the Atletico Madrid. And England fullback. I just can't see a world in which Arsenal go out and sign Kieran Trippier, to be honest, after his links with Tottenham. And also after the fact that Manchester United are interested too. And if you were picking between the two right now, I think as a player, probably quite obvious where you'd rather want to go, unfortunately for Arsenal fans. More back page chat, though, we'll do after this, including some more Manchester United news. Declan Rice is on the back pages once more at West Ham, and the Athletic report that Crystal Palace wants Arsenal's Eddie Nketiah. The Gunners, as I say, all over those paper stories. We'll talk about them next on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk. Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
This is Football Social Daily from Sports Social. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Niall McCorn, Steve McNaughton, Marley Anderson with me. Time to talk transfers now as we have approached the final week of the summer transfer window for season 21-22. And the latest story coming out of Manchester United is that they've loaned Brandon Williams to Norwich City. We know that United, Steve, have quite a big squad, and a number of those are young players. Brandon Williams going to Norwich, it will be a good learning experience for him and a chance for him to get some first-team action.
Yeah, definitely. I think we've seen glimpses of what he's capable of in a Man United shirt, and I think, you know, playing week in, week out, which probably is one of the terms of that loan deal, that he plays a certain amount of games, will only do him good. I'm coming up against that level of opposition every weekend, and midweek will be good for him. It's a smart move. You know, he's got Billy Gilmore there as well, and Norwich have been much more active than they were last time they come up into the Premier League, and I think he makes them a better team. You know, so I think it's a move that ticks the boxes all round for me, and good luck to him.
Yeah, and definitely I think as well there's a lot to be said for it being a Premier League loan move rather than a move to the Championship. And that's not to disrespect any Championship sides or any players who have gone on loan to Championship clubs, but certainly it's a better experience, in my opinion, Marley, if a player is getting minutes against the sorts of sides he'll be facing if he did break into the Manchester United first team on a regular basis.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it goes back to that that saying I can never remember, is it steel sharpens steel or whatever it is? That I couldn't remember it all.
I think we're going through the periodic table of elements, yeah, like as the podcast progresses. It'd be iron sharpens iron next.
Yeah, lithium on aluminium or something, yeah. But yeah, you know, it's good for his development, isn't it? You know, I'm not quite sure how good Brandon Williams is. I've never really sort of got what he brings, but obviously he's very highly rated by Man United and obviously by Norwich, who've seen him and fancy him. I think he's more of a, probably because he seems to be more of a defensive first fullback than an attacking roaming one who go and get involved in the play higher up the field. But Norwich will need that. Norwich will need defenders who can defend, because they are going to be down there. They might survive, they might not, but either way, they're going to be in that scrap. You know, conceded 7 goals already in the first, 8 goals already in the first 2 games. So you're looking at that and thinking, yeah, you need defenders who are going to fight and going to, you know, roll up the sleeves and have a scrap for you. And I feel like Brandon Williams has that type of attitude. And we'll see if he's good enough to sink or swim at Norwich. I think it's a good club for him, a good move. I think the left back there, Giannoulis, hasn't looked, you know, untouchable in the first couple of games. So you should see 25-30 games out of Brandon Williams this season, and we'll see how high his ceiling can be.
I have to say, brutal start for Norwich though. Liverpool first game and then Manchester City second. I think even if they had a decent back four, they'd be struggling against those two. But Brandon Absolutely. Williams has gone on loan to Norwich City for the season. Now let's talk about this story, which is in the back pages of the Times newspaper today. It's about West Ham once again and about their midfield man, Declan Rice. Allegedly, he feels, just to summarise the story, that he's being priced out of a move this summer and will supposedly reject any new deal that West Ham offer him. Is that fair, do you think, Steve? Because it looks like £100 million is what it's going to take to prize Declan Rice away from West Ham. We've spoken about transfer valuations and that actually if West Ham feel that he's worth £100 million to them, then that's fine if they want to put that price tag on him. But in terms of his quality and what you could get for that price elsewhere, does one, Declan Rice have a point, and two, do you think that that price tag is putting off any other Premier League sides for coming in for him?
I think Declan Rice does have a point. £100 million does seem a bit excessive for him. He's a very good player, you know, there's no doubt about it, and I think his game in the last couple of seasons has come on leaps and bounds. He had a tremendous Euros for England this summer, but I feel that it's about 25-30 million quid too much for him in comparison to other players that are moving around in Europe.
Yeah, I mean, what West Ham fans would say, though, is, oh, Villa got £100 million for Jack Grealish, so why can't we get £100 million for our star player Declan Rice? But does it just boil down to the fact that, quite simply, Grealish is an attacking player and will get you goals and assists, whereas Declan Rice is more of a defensive player, and naturally, they are less valuable than forward players?
Yeah, exactly that. You know, if Declan Rice played further forward and was chipping him with 10 or 12 goals a season and, you know, 7 or 8 assists, and, you know, I think it's a different conversation. But the reality is Jack Grealish's importance to Villa was just astronomical. And that's what warranted, you know, the deal going through, is that they got to a point where when it hit 100 million, Aston Villa said, well, we can reinvest that money smartly. And it looks like, you know, they have done. But I just think that, yeah, for me, 75 feels about right for Declan Rice. Obviously, you've got the English player tax on top of it, which comes with all the England internationals moving. And it must be frustrating for him to hear through the press that you know, it's £100 million to do it. Someone will do the deal for him. You know, Declan Rice is still a young man. You know, I'm not sure. He's got to be 21, 22, something like that, hasn't he? You know, but I think that he's got loads of time on his side. I don't know how long's left on his deal, you know, but if he won't sign a new one, that's a pretty good indication that he wants out, you know, at some point soon. And I think West Ham obviously run the risk, like many other clubs have done, of losing him for nothing if they don't, you know, deal at some point soon. But like I said, you've got them two plant pots in charge. You know, we were kind of, you know, coming up with these things. And I think to cut the nose off to spite the face, you'll probably end up leaving for nothing. You know, because that's the type of owners they are. Instead of going, hold on a minute, he's got 12 months left there. You know, if someone comes in with 50, 60 million quid, we'll rip their arm off. You know what I mean? But he is good, and he will. I could see him at United. I think, you know, he's probably a midfielder at United, you know, are calling out for. And I think United certainly have the budget, or appear to have the budget, to be able to pay 75 million pounds for him. Yeah, he's, no disrespect to West Ham, he's destined for bigger things, and I think he will eventually get his move.
I can see Rice running down his contract a little bit more. I can't see anyone coming in for him and getting him in the space of 7 days. You know, it's just too much, and it's too much money. And I don't think anybody's got that type of money, or is willing to spend that type of money. I think with
I know Inter are skint, but to think that Declan Rice could be worth more than Lukaku is quite mind-boggling, isn't it?
Well, then again, West Ham fans will be like, oh, he's only worth what we think he's worth and all that stuff. That new chestnut that keeps coming out all over social media these days. But yeah, I mean, Rice is young enough to run his contract down a little bit, and still not miss out on getting to a top club. As you say, what is he, 22? You know, you run his contract down, he moves at 24, gets himself a £30 million signing on fee and goes on to win Champions Leagues with whoever's winning them in 3 years' time and needs a DM. So, you know, Man United are probably needing one more than anyone, I would argue, in 2 or 3 years, if you get a prime Sancho, a prime, or coming to his prime, Mason Greenwood, a prime Rashford. Why would you not go there and play with the English lads and, you know, form that sort of core with all those guys? So I would sit tight if I was in West Ham, who's still going forwards at the minute. They're not regressing, they're not going backwards. They've had a good start to the season. I know it shouldn't really matter in the long term of things, but it's not as if you're scrapping relegation and stuff like that. So stick it out, see what the landscape's like in a year's time or 18 months time.
I think as long as Mason Mount's at Chelsea, he'll be fancying a move there. But then again, Do those two aforementioned plant pots want to sell one of their prized assets to a London rival? That's a question that certainly lingers over the Declan Rice situation. He's obviously playing really well for West Ham, and West Ham in general playing excellently at the moment, beating Leicester last night, as we've already discussed. But that's in the times that Rice feels he's being priced out of a move and will reject any new contract offer. Final piece of transfer gossip comes from The Athletic, and they report that Crystal Palace are keen to sign Arsenal striker Eddie Nketiah for £10 million, whereas Arsenal are holding out for £20 million. We've spoken about the combustible situation at Arsenal and the issues that they've got there, Steve. To go to Crystal Palace and lose a striker that they've got, when possibly Aubameyang could be going out the door as well for £10 million, does that, again, sort of highlight the issues at Arsenal? And secondly, if you're Nketiah, is that a tempting move? Because it's almost guaranteed that you're likely to be in the starting 11 with the amount of time Christian Benteke spends on the bench.
Yeah, I think it's a decent move for him. I think it's a move that makes sense to play under Patrick Vieira. He'll want to do that. Crystal Palace are, you know, crying out for a new striker. I think the disparity with the fee is a bit weird. You know, obviously Arsenal holding out for £20 million is fanciful. In all honesty,
is that just because of his age? Do you think though, because he is so young?
Well, he's 22, isn't he? You know, I'm just looking at his stats here. I don't know this off the top of my head, obviously. I know, but you know, his best season, he scored 3 goals, in the league, and that was when he was on loan at Leeds in 2019-20. He played 17 games for them and scored 3 goals. Now, if you look at Arsenal, you know, 2 goals last season. 2 goals the season before, 1 the season before, none the season before that, 3 in the Europa League last season, 1 assist in about 5 years. You know, 20
million.
He's not
prolific, is what you're saying.
You know, yeah, 20 million for a player delivering them numbers is, you know, it's crazy when you think that, you know, Leicester signed Patson Daka for around that fee, you know, and he's. And we've not seen it yet in the two brief appearances he's had in the league, but he has been an absolute goal machine wherever he's been. And you look at that from a value point of view, and you go, where would you spend your money? Two players similar in age, and you know, but you've got one who's just can't score enough goals. You know, he just loves it, and he's scoring 38 in 26 games and all that in the Austrian league, and his confidence is sky high. And you've got a kid, 22 years of age. So don't get me wrong, loads of growth and development in him, from an ability point of view, but the return is so little. So you can't be bringing him in with the expectation that he's going to score you 10, 12, 15 goals, because he's never done it. You know what I mean? So what's Patrick Vieira going to do that turns that light switch on, you know, and suddenly turns him into... It's not going to happen, as we know. It's not going to happen. And I think, you know, maybe the Premier League isn't Nketiah's level. Maybe he's a very, very, very good championship striker.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. But in terms of what Crystal Palace are trying to do under Patrick Vieira, Marley, they've been playing 4-3-3 in their opening two Premier League games. They got dispatched by Chelsea 3-0 first game of the season. And their game at the weekend was goalless draw against Brentford. And, you know, that's testament to them for keeping Brentford out, because they are a side that like to score goals. But also Crystal Palace, you know, if they don't score themselves or find a way through, that's going to be an issue they need to tackle. In terms of that formation, 4-3-3, the three front players against Brentford at the weekend for Crystal Palace was Zaha on the right, Benteke through the middle, and Jeffrey Schlupp on the left-hand side. And Schlupp was the only player for Crystal Palace that was substituted off. Patrick Vieira only used one substitute throughout the game. So actually, in terms of Eddie Nketiah and coming into Palace, if that was to happen, is there a case for the versatility there and him being possibly used as an option out wide?
I would say that doesn't really suit him. The one thing I've seen about Nketiah is he's fantastic in the box. He's a bit of a goal poacher. He's a bit of a Jermaine Defoe-style character. I know his goal record hasn't quite backed that up yet, but I certainly feel like there's still potential there. I think, you know, he's at a higher level. I'm kind of comparing him in my head to Rian Brewster at Liverpool, and he ended up moving for 16 million, and he's only just scored his first goal against Carlisle a couple of weeks ago for Sheffield United. And I just think if he was worth 16 million, Arsenal are probably just in valuing Nketiah at 20. But then again, Brewster had come off the back of scoring, I think, 16 goals for Swansea the year before he moved to Sheffield United. So, you know, it's a tough one, really. But I think Nketiah could be a decent player. I think if you could pair him with Benteke as a front two, I think that's better. But signing a guy who's played centre forward for a long time and then, you know, shunting him out wide in a 4-3-3 is just a little bit, you know, why not just go for a left winger? Can you find a left winger that you can go for? Could you pay a massive fee and get Hudson-Odoi on loan for a year for Chelsea? You know, I mean, it's a big ask, but if Vieira backs himself, his pull of come and work for me, I won the World Cup, I won all kinds of stuff, come and learn from me. You know, be ambitious, try something. But, you know, buying a square peg and shoving him into a round hole, in my opinion, is you know, chasing your tail a little bit.
I tell you what, if they're learning off Patrick Vieira, all of the Crystal Palace midfielders are going to have Vic Vapor Rub on the front of their shirt, because that was one thing I always used to remember that Patrick Vieira used to do. Right, that's it for Football Social Daily today. That's it for the transfer gossip. Thank you very much, Steve. Thank you, Marley. Appreciate your company as always, and appreciate you listening in wherever you are listening to Football Social Daily from. Why not hit subscribe if this is your first time listening to the podcast? Because we'll have a new episode tomorrow and every subsequent day of the Premier League season. We are the only podcast that will do that for you. So if you do hit subscribe or follow, that way you'll be notified as soon as a new episode is ready. We'll be back tomorrow with more, but that's it from Football Social Daily for today, and we'll see you then.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.